This is Rocket Science.
Guys, why did the CubeSat join the gym?
Why?
Because it wanted to work on its orbital fitness.
I thought that's its finesse.
Fitness. It wanted to, you know, round out its edges as a cube. Anyhow, welcome to This is Rocket Science. I'm one of the co-hosts, Tina.
I'm the other co-host,
Sonia. And I'm your other co-host, Justin.
And we have a surprise guest today.
Hey.
Hey, everybody. I'm David.
David, do you want to tell us who you are?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am one of the co-leads on CSI's CubeSat mission and also the lead of our systems team.
Ooh. Everyone, give a warm welcome to David.
Thank you.
Right. So today, if you can't tell already, we're going to be talking about CubeSat, which is one of CSI's many projects, missions, whatever the technical term is. So I'm going to hand it over to David so he can explain what CubeSat is, what they do, and what makes them so cool.
Yeah, absolutely. So the whole idea behind CubeSats is that lots of the time when companies and governments are launching rockets into space, they have a little bit of extra mass that they don't need for whatever their intended payload is. And the CubeSat is a small, and it's a cube, so it's 10 centimeters by 10 centimeters by 10 centimeters. It's a little box that, since it's this uniform structure, people can fill out that extra mass and room on each rocket with their CubeSat payloads. So when these rockets go up and do whatever they're made for, they can also launch out a couple of these little cubes as well as whatever else they're doing.
That's really cool. So the people on your team, I imagine, are a lot of mech-y people?
So we've got a lot of mechanical engineers, but also our computer science, there's a lot of computer science people. Mm-hmm. We've got four sub-teams. So there's the structures and thermal team, and there are a lot of mech-ies, and there's also the software team, which is a lot of computer science, but there's also the payload team, which is our science instrument, and that's got a lot of physics and astronomy people. And then there's systems, which is some mech-ies, some electrical engineers.
Very cool.
That's really cool. What kind of instruments do you put inside?
Yeah. So the payload of the CubeSat is called CHAZ, which means the Circumgalactic H-Alpha Spectrograph.
Yeah, CHAZ.
Yeah. So CHAZ was developed by Professor David Szymanowicz, and there's a big one out in Arizona. But we're working on miniaturizing a little tiny version that can fit inside our kind of shoebox-sized satellite. And the hope would be that because we can put it up in space, we can ignore all the atmospheric effects and get some really nice data to add to the one on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, so you said 10 centimeters
edge? Yeah, so one cube, or so what we call a 1U for a CubeSat, is 10 centimeters by 10 centimeters by 10 centimeters, but you can get multiple cubes in one CubeSat. Our mission started as being pitched as a 3U, so 10 by 10 by 30. We've since expanded and we're pretty sure we'll need to actually be a 6U, so 10 by 20 by 30, which is still pretty small. You could still hold it in your hand, but it's a lot more room to work with for a payload.
Mm-hmm. This might be a silly question, but is there a reason those specific dimensions for those specific dimensions?
Yeah, so the reason is basically just that it was arbitrarily chosen. It's easy to remember numbers, but then once it was uniform, anyone was able to build them and fill into the same deployers. So companies could make a CubeSat deployer, and any university in the world could build a CubeSat and know it would fit. So it was just sort of pick one and run with it.
Awesome.
So where are you guys in the process right now? What has the timeline been? I know this CubeSat has been approved for launch. When is it going to space?
That's right. So yeah, very exciting. Last year we sent out some proposals and we got approved by NASA's CubeSat Launch Initiative to be able to send our CubeSat into space. And so they're covering a couple hundred thousand dollars worth of launch costs. But the kicker is we don't have all the parts to actually build the CubeSat. So once we've got it put together, it'll definitely be able to go into space, but we've still got some work to do before we get there. Mm-hmm. It's slated for launch by the end of 2027. Mm-hmm. So we've got a couple years still to work on it. And late 2026 or 2027 is most likely for when we'd be able to send it up.
That's not even the current class of incoming freshmen anymore.
27?
No. So incoming class is 28. So current freshmen.
Wow.
Are 27.
So current freshmen on your team are going to see this payload go to space.
That's the hope. Yeah.
That's very cool.
It's a long way up. We'll have a couple changings of the guard before then.
So will past people or students that have been a part of the mission still be a part of it? In a sense?
Hope so. Certainly, like, there's no way they're going to stop me from coming back to see that launch when it happens. And I think a lot of us feel that way. It's like, even though we'll have graduated, everyone's going to stay in the Slack. Everyone's going to stay offering advice. And we're all going to want to come back when it finally gets to launch.
Nice.
So yeah. I was looking at the website that is very outdated, but this part is not about the 2027 launch. Since when have you been working on this specific model?
Yeah, so CubeSat as a CSI mission started before COVID. There was a version of this. And then that version of the mission fell apart and died when the pandemic hit. And so the new CubeSat, Born from the Ashes, has only been around for about a year or two now. So last year it was started back up by one of our co-leads, Matt Wernicken, and Bruno Urges, who is lead before them. I was graduated now and is a master's student. And what they were doing is sort of bringing together CSI and astronomy and making this mission work. And last year was pretty much all figuring out what on earth a CubeSat is and how to put one together and write a bunch of proposals. Mm-hmm. And then this year has been more of, okay, we've written these proposals, we know we can do this, now let's figure out the basics of engineering and modeling and like plans for actually building it. And the hope is that next year and the year after, we could finally start doing the real hands-on, put it together kind of work.
Really impressive.
Yeah, that's really cool. Do you know, so you said that you guys had to write and send in proposals to NASA. What is that process like, dealing with NASA and, you know, preparing all the proposals?
Yeah, they're very dense. It's a lot of writing. But the nice thing about it is once you've written one, you've got abstracts and you've got blurbs and you've got an appendix about each of your different subteams. So the first one's definitely the most work, and after that, you can do a lot of cut and pasting to fit into all the future ones. And there's some amount of sort of bureaucracy and red tape, but honestly, all the people we've talked to and emailed with and communicated with have been really, really helpful. They're excited about space and they're excited that we're excited.
Awesome.
I'm really curious, what excites you about CubeSat? What motivated you to join this mission and stay on this mission?
I think space is cool. I wouldn't be in CSI if I didn't think that. But the CubeSats specifically are like a spacecraft that not anyone, but like a college student can reasonably put in work and help make come together. And that's kind of unique. Like rockets sort of has that. But even then, it's like you need a really good rocket to get into space. And CubeSat, similarly, you need to work really hard to get it to work in space. But that like all of these parts come together, and then finally you've got like a spacecraft built by college students. And I can't think of very many ways you can go about doing something like that.
That is really awesome, actually.
So are there other colleges or other CubeSat teams across the country that you've been working with and learning from? What are some current cubes that are out there right now?
That's a tough question for what CubeSats are up there right now. They often don't have too much of a life expectancy. Like we know there's some that have only lasted a couple days or even a week, but also sometimes they'll last for a full mission lifetime of like, it can be up to 5 years. So I don't know any off the dome that are up there right now. But we do know a bunch of universities that are also like in this business and have some great missions going on. A big group that we work really closely with is Cal Poly Pomona out in California. And they've got this thing they've developed called the Proves Kit, which is this 1U CubeSat. And the idea with this is that this kit is open source and anyone can figure out how to build it. So even, you know, high school could put this together from all the parts and have a CubeSat ready to launch into space. And so they've also been approved for a launch where they're sending up 6 1Us all at the same time. And we're going to be one of those 1Us. So next year, a big part of what CubeSat's going to be doing is putting together one of those kits for them so that can be part of the launch. And that'll be great for us too, to get a lot of practice and trial building a CubeSat before putting together our 6U behemoth.
I just Googled that, and I Googled CubeSat kit, and the header is think inside the box.
Yeah, Yeah, they're fantastic to work with.
Mm-hmm. It looks very sci-fi.
Are all CubeSats made alike? Are they all similar? Or do you think each CubeSat has its own personality and characteristics?
Oh, they've definitely all got their own flair.
Okay.
So like Cal Poly, for example, their circuit boards, they engrave like memes on them. So there's like Skyrim quotes and haikus written on their boards. Yeah, so they're having fun with it.
That's so funny.
That's
yeah.
Weird.
Wait, this reminds me, this sort of a tangent, my lab manager wants to name all the Prusas we have in our lab. We have like 9 + 3 different types of 3D printers. And he was like, we could name them after these like fantasy series princes, or the Greek muses, or
Ooh.
Santa's reindeer.
I would be so on board with muses.
At the makerspace I used to work at, they were all named after Egyptian gods. But then that was like years ago, and we all lost track of that. So every so often, you just find a flash drive that says like Thoth on it. And you're like, what is this for?
Amun Ra.
Do you guys know what the Columbia Cube will be named?
Yes. So the 6U CubeSat mission is Lioness,
mm-hmm.
We're pretty happy with the name, which is the Lion Imaging Orbiter for Nanosatellite Enabled Spectrographic Surveys.
Very cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's just, that's an amazing acronym.
Did the acronym come first or the name?
They came together, but it was a lot of pulling teeth. We were, for months, honestly almost a year after development, we were just CU-BSAT, like Columbia University BSAT. And that was terrible. And NASA said, please change this. The name is just CubeSat. So we did a bunch of brainstorming and threw spaghetti at the wall and landed on Lioness.
I think that's a solid one to start with. Because CU,
it's already there.
You can't like not take that opportunity.
We thought so too, but apparently Cornell's already done that. So
Cornell. Yeah, I run into the same problem in badminton where we want a chant, we want to go CU, and it's like, but Cornell is here.
Oh no. They can't take our thunder.
They can't take our
sea. David, could you break down the acronym again? So
yes,
what is
absolutely.
The hope for this cube? How long do we want it to be in space? And what type of data will we ultimately find?
Absolutely. So that instrument I mentioned before, the CHAZ, what that is really good at is telling really slight redshifts and blueshifts. So like Doppler effect, is this moving towards or away from us? Of gas clouds around other galaxies. So we're looking really far away, whole other galaxies, and the idea is seeing how the gas that's around them in what's called the circumgalactic medium, how that gas is moving around. It's an area that we know is there, but there's very little research that's actually been done on it. And the thinking is that if we can tell, well, in half of this galaxy, the gas is moving towards us, and in half the gas is moving away from us, then maybe we know what that galaxy is spinning like, and we can learn about how they were formed from all that. So in the name, it's the Line Imaging Orbiter, because the lines are basically from a spectrograph, seeing what kind of elements are there, and we're specifically looking at like a specific hydrogen line. And so it's the Line Imaging Orbiter for nanosatellite enabled. So, you know, satellites letting us look at lines, spectrographic surveys. So we're taking a peek at everything that's in the sky and a couple different galaxies.
Gotcha. Will the CubeSat team also be responsible for analyzing the data once we get there?
Ooh, that's a good question. We're a long way out from that. The payload team's been doing a bunch of great preliminary work on figuring out how to miniaturize CHAZ down, but we've not done a ton of crunching yet on what we're going to do when we've got all that data back. I think we're going to hand over pretty much all of it to the Szymanowicz lab and, you know, let the astronomy people figure out what they can with it. But absolutely, the CubeSat payload members are going to want to be in on that and helping figure out what's going on there.
So exciting.
How soon after launch do you expect to start getting data?
It should be pretty immediate. It generally doesn't take more than a day or so to get your boot up after you're kicked out of the rocket. NASA's very stringent about the fact you have to have your electronics not turn on while you're still in the rocket. They get really upset if that happens. But once you're out, you've got to have everything able to boot up within just a couple hours.
Why are they upset?
Well, something about like if you've got your machine turning on and moving around or making vibrations in their rocket, maybe the main payload might suffer for it, and they don't want the little side payloads to cause any problems.
It's like gotta turn on airplane mode on the plane.
You said airplane mode thing.
Power off all the devices.
Exactly, yeah.
It's actually so good. Right.
So in your time on this project, what are some of the best moments that have happened?
So getting that first proposal accepted was huge, because we were really just like, we didn't know what we were talking about. It was a lot of ideas and cool theories and fun concepts. And then CSLI said, yes, here's $300,000. And we all suddenly had to realize we were actually building this thing. So that moment was pretty incredible. We had a party about all that. Another one is last summer, we were funded by the University Nanosatellite Program, which is like a part NASA, part Space Force, part Air Force conglomerate that let a couple of us go as interns and work on it over the summer. And we got to go, about seven of us, to the SmallSat conference that's in Utah every year. And that's something we definitely like to find the funds to send more people to in the future, because it was really great to see not just what all the other companies are doing right now and all sorts of talks, but also all the other universities that were presenting their work there. And you know, that's where we met a lot of people and found out what everyone is doing.
Very cool. So in that initial proposal, was it already settled that you guys were miniaturizing Chaz, or were there many ideas and NASA sort of helped pick one?
Yeah, at that point we had to be locked in on what we were pitching for. We had a couple ideas before then. I remember there being some talks about pointing the CubeSat back at Earth and looking for wildfires and sort of trying to detect from that, but that didn't end up taking up off the ground. So for that proposal, it was a lot about how we'd be looking at these lines and using the spectrograph. And also, I should mention, a big part of our proposal as well is that we want to link all of this with an outreach effort. And so the hope is that not only can we make lessons out of the whole satellite development process, but also once we get that data back, to be able to share that with middle school groups around the city to help them get excited about space and learn what goes into building a satellite.
That's really cool, because earlier when you mentioned the Cal Poly collaboration, like they're making kits for high school students. That's like, what public outreach efforts do you think Columbia is trying to look into?
Yeah, so gotta give a shout out to another of CSI's missions, which is the outreach mission, and they do a ton of fantastic work, like connecting with school groups and keeping these kids, you know, excited and giving them model rockets to build and drones to throw airplanes towards and all sorts of great things. And so we want to build out a lesson plan around CubeSat to help them have, you know, more material to teach these kids with.
How has your involvement in CubeSat, do you think, influenced your personal growth or shifted what you want to do as a career?
There's a big one. So this is actually not my first CubeSat team. I'm a combined plan student from another university, and that was down at American University in DC. And while I was there, they had a mini CubeSat. They called it a ThinSat project. And that totally crashed and burned because COVID happened and we missed our launch. And it never took up off the ground. We had some ideas for how to turn our payload into a hot air balloon launch, a high altitude balloon launch. But to this day, that's still not quite come together. So when I came here, it was a lot of like, what they've got, a satellite team too. I have to get on that and sort of get another shot at working on this kind of a project. But so since working on both of those, I've definitely wanted to, you know, work in satellite engineering full time, because I think there's a ton of really interesting engineering decisions. You've got to work with huge number of constraints, and also, but it's like, it's sizes that are imaginable. It's not a huge rocket. It's an object you can hold in your hand, or on a bigger size, you know, walk around on a lab floor.
Very awesome. And so this was kind of a comeback mission for you. I have to see it happen someday.
I'm not going to be here when we launch anyway, but it's always fun to, yeah, oh, you know it, but it's fun to get to work on these projects and see how each one shakes out differently. And, you know, you can always learn lessons from when something doesn't go quite the way you expect it to.
Mm-hmm.
You're just going to have a collection of satellites you've been working on.
Yeah, just I'll make a little 3D print of each one and keep them on my desk, something like that.
That seems like a
That's
great
really
idea.
Adorable. So, David's wearing a senior expo shirt right now, and David's a graduating senior. So, you want to tell us what are your goals before you graduate for CubeSat, and then where are you going to be next?
Ooh, so goals before I graduate for CubeSat. I mean, probably nothing more super productive is happening this year, but we've been thinking a lot about how we can really hit the ground running when we return. So the systems team, which I've been on, is where we do a lot of like electrical engineering and working on our radio. And so we've been doing some lessons on how to get licensed for a ham radio license. I got one last summer, it's really easy. And so I wanted to give some pointers for some folks to also be able to get that kind of a license. We've been looking a lot into like how to license out from different ground stations and what we need to do to build out the electrical wiring for a real little radio. So we've got soldering kits, we've got people to contact about ground stations, and the hope is that when everything comes back, we can have a lot of really great hands-on projects and keep everyone excited and engaged and have a lot of steam next year. So we're in sort of a preparing for what's next kind of stage right now.
Best of luck. All right, so I personally have more of a fun question left. If not a cube, what shape would you propose these satellites have?
So I have opinions on this. And so people, you know, Sputnik's the first satellite, it's a ball, it's a classic. But I think if you want something that can tessellate and fit into a structure, because that's the whole point of a CubeSat, right, is you can fit a whole bunch of them into these, like, not full payload bays, I think hexagons are where you want to go.
Like the bees.
The bees know what they're
exactly.
doing.
Exactly. Beehive satellite, I think, is an untapped market.
Drawing inspiration from web, from bees.
That your future company, the beehivesatellite.co.
Wow. The hive.
David at beehivesatellite.
No, that's perfect. I can see it already.
All right. So thank you so much for coming on. It was so lovely to talk. Do you have anything you want to say to our viewers about CubeSat or about CSI, about how they can get involved?
If you want to get involved, definitely come to the first meeting of CSI next year, because we're going to have great pitches on all of the missions. I've been shilling CubeSat and outreach a little bit, but there's 9 other great missions. I think maybe there'll be 10 by next year. So you really can't go wrong. It's a lot of fantastic groups.
Awesome. Well, happy graduation.
Thank you
for coming on.
Okay, why did the Beehive satellite become the life of the space party?
Why?
Because it always had a buzzing social orbit.
And on that beautiful note, signing off for this year. See y'all in the fall. See you.
Bye.